Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Spencer Dinwiddie on the show. Appreciate you being on. So, like, what happens? Let's talk about it. When you get traded, where to live, and all of the stuff that kind of goes along with it. Like, you said you're in a hotel.
Yeah.
Like, I know you have a kid. Well, one kid, right?
Yeah.
So that's crazy that you just get thrown into the mix like that, and you have to figure out your life immediately. Obviously, it's part of your life, but, like, how do you figure all of that stuff out?
I mean, having been traded, twice now, the team actually helps you out with it. And there's, like, a lot of little nuanced rules. You get, like, I think 45 days in a hotel, you know, that they'll pay for and, like, different stuff like that. So, you know, it's really just pack up and go. As far as my son, like, he splits time. So, like, that he still goes back to Dallas and stuff like that. So, a little bit easier possibly on him. And now he's not enrolled in school anymore, and he gets to kind of, you know, do full-time homeschool and stuff like that. So, you know, I think he's actually enjoying that a little bit more. So he's probably happy the Nets pull the trigger.
There's a lot of, like, analysis in football where, you know, when a new quarterback goes to a team, let's say it's like Aaron Rodgers is going to go to the Jets. It's like he has to learn a new system. He has to learn his teammates and stuff like that. Basketball, we don't talk like that. We don't say, like, oh, Spencer's going from the Mavericks to the Nets. He has to learn the new system, the new playbook, just because of the way we think about basketball. We don't think of it as being like this voluminous playbook that you have to dive through. But what is that like for you? Cause, I mean, because you were here before. Obviously, there's maybe some carryover, but it's been a while. So, like, what is that? And also gelling with all these guys who you've never played with before.
I mean, I think that's more so the key difference, right? I think, like you said, in football, the playbook is voluminous, as you said. And a lot of that comes down to timing, like on the routes and stuff, right? And so people might have a different timing. I think that's kind of where it's similar. You know, everybody has a different game and a different kind of timing and where they like the ball and all that other stuff. And so as, like, kind of the leader of that ship, in a sense, trying to learn all these new guys on the fly that also are trying to learn each other adds a completely new dynamic. When you're plugging into, you know, kind of a well-oiled machine already, you're just like, okay, I'm going to get in here. I'm going to learn this little piece today. I'm going to learn this little piece tomorrow. And you can kind of almost chuck it out in that respect. You know, when you come into a new team that's also just becoming a completely new team as a whole with no practice time, it's kind of like just turn on the faucet and let it run and just we'll figure it out.
One of the things also that I feel like I intuit about you is that you really respect and admire guys who can adjust their game to the situation. And I think that's also because you are good at that. Sort of as you appraise the current net situation, where do you see yourself adapting to? What do you think the team needs right now?
I mean, I think easy answer is time, obviously. I think, you know, the ability to kind of coalesce is something that we're missing. I think having that defensive identity. And I think, you know, learn each guy as a human being as well. Obviously, we see Mikhail putting up big numbers scoring. We know Cam's a prolific shooter. We got to get, you know, Doe shooting on track. I mean, he obviously has shot 40% for a big portion of his career from three. Another good spot up guy, Joe, obviously can really shoot it. So, you know, in theory, we have, you know, great spot up guys. I know our analytics department is obviously big on high quality shots. And the funny part is we've actually been generating a lot of those. We just haven't been necessarily converting them at the clip that we want. But it bodes well to you know, winning basketball games when you hold the top two offenses to, you know, 108 and 101. We just got to knock down shots. And then for me, everything they talk about is just getting in the paint, making the right play, letting the game kind of decide it. Of late, obviously, that's been a lot more, you know, double-digit assist games and a little bit less volume scoring-wise. And some of that's also due to the defense that, you know, the team are playing. They're blitzing and they're putting two on the pick and roll to kind of stop the penetration. So, you know, you make the right read and get off it.
Yeah, and I don't think we'd even talk about with you the fact that, you know, you left here Brooklyn, you went to Washington. The idea is you're sharing the ball with Beal. And then you get traded to Dallas. You go play with Luka, who obviously is usage-wise, what is he, one or two? You went from being, you know, sort of that the off-guard combo. I mean, of course, you handled the ball in D.C. and in Dallas. You are the guy handling the ball all the time in Brooklyn. How is that for you to kind of tap back into – you know, that's the Spencer that we remember before, you know, the journey that you went on to come back to Brooklyn. Yeah. How is that for you?
Oh, man, I think in the last year and a half, not including Brooklyn, I've had three completely separate roles. I think when I was in D.C., me and Brad were both kind of tasked with attacking to a degree. It wasn't necessarily off ball. It wasn't necessarily on ball. It was kind of like, you know, just kind of read it type of situation. Which was interesting as we were trying to put a new team together at that point in time as well. When I first got to Dallas last season, you know, I was as the third creator behind Luka and JB. And that role was more so just like attack. Just, you know, when you get in, like, it's about kind of all out just aggression. If those guys aren't rolling, right, you kind of got to read to see if Luka's hot or JB's hot first. And if they're not, you know, then you just come in, you'd be super aggressive. This year, playing like true, like kind of co-pilot with Luka was, you know, you kind of start off the game as a catch and shoot guy. And, you know, obviously for me, my catch and shoot numbers throughout my career have always been pretty good. It's the like grenades and the harder, you know, deep step backs and things that typically drop my percentage. So you saw a real big rise in overall 3-point percentage just from the fact that I was taking a bunch of easy ones versus taking a bunch of hard ones. Which was fun. And then obviously when he was off the court, it was more so of the kind of, you know, get guys involved, you know what I'm saying? Check Christian Wood and Tim Hardaway's temperature and, you know, all that type of stuff. Now back to Brooklyn this year, you know what I'm saying? For this last 20 game or so stretch, it's back completely on the ball, but it's not the standpoint of just being able to be like, hey, look, like just attacking, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Like, I think, in 1920, the last time y'all really saw me, the bigger guys were hurt. You know, we had like Joe Harris and Torian Prince as shooters, but, you know, our other really dynamic guys were Jared Allen and DJ. And so it was pretty much just getting the paint every play and try to finish. If you don't finish, they'll offensive rebound, tip dunk it, or throw the lob. And that was kind of the crux of our offense. Now, you know, there's a certain level of, you know, reading the game, calling Mikhail's plays early, trying to get Cam a couple of touches early. You got to get in the paint and also, you know, break down the defense as well. So it's a combined effort, combined mentality, I would say, more so than any stop I've been in. And again, like I said, I think that's why my assist numbers have been so high right now, is because trying to fill out the group and trying to make sure that everybody has a certain rhythm so we can kind of have all those options to attack with and play with versus it just being like one style.
You were talking about step backs, right? And grenades.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, you can look at your percentages and say, like, oh, I catch and shoot. I mean, you're not always going to get catch and shoot threes. Like, that's a product of someone else.
Yeah.
So when you have step backs, even if you shoot, I don't know what the percentage is, let's say it's 30%, mm-hmm. do you still think by doing it, like, I always wonder, the product of actually still attempting the shot has a positive effect on how defenders defend you, even if you don't make it? Or is it more of a rhythm thing in the game where you're like, it's not like you're thinking of it on that level? Do you understand? Do you know what I mean by that? It's like, because there's some product of, like, by taking that step back three, you're forcing the defender to at least, it's like in football again, throwing deep, testing the defense a couple of times forces the defense to play deep. Is there some level of that, or is it more of just the product of the moment? You're playing basketball, you're not a computer.
A little bit of both. I think obviously we understand what's a good shot, what's a bad shot. Like you said, you have to maintain the threat to score at all three levels, and it's a shot capable of making. So that's why sometimes you take those. You know, overall though, the volume of the shots that you want to take, all you always want to make it the highest quality possible. So that then obviously deals with more rim pressure than anything. But, you know, threes and layups is how pretty much I grew up in the league, right? Like, that's all Kenny preached. That's all, you know what I'm saying? Like, most teams circa 2016-15 or so have ever talked about, right? So you're always going to try to look for those two, you know, unless you're just a complete mid-range sniper. But, you know, I think you maintain the threat, but you understand that you want to get to the rim first. And that's not just for layups for yourself, but also just to cause havoc and create opportunities for teammates.
So you've also played on super star-studded teams like Kyrie, KD, Beal, Luka, and now coming back to a more egalitarian situation. What is that like dynamic-wise in terms of how you do figure out what you want to do on the court, what players' roles are? Is there like an open dialogue, or how do you actually find your spots?
Oh man. Nah, I mean, I think we have a bunch of good guys and we have a bunch of like fairly, you know, honest and realistic guys. And I think, you know, in that respect, along with our coach JV, those kind of come into place in terms of roles and things like that. It's not necessarily, like you said, as loud as a Luka or, you know what I'm saying, superstar studded group in that respect. But, you know, we've seen Mikal score at an extremely high level. We got to continue to get him his touches. We know who our shooters are. And then, obviously, I know what my job is in terms of, like I said, again, that's probably sound like a broken record, but just, you know, run the pick and roll efficiently, get in the lane, trying to get guys shots, right? So, you know, it's not rocket science as much as it is, you know, a situation where you want all the nuances to come together. And some of that you're just going to miss without the certain like amount of time.
You talk about Jacque Vaughn. He had a quote about you the other day. I think it was like this past Tuesday where he said, "I've seen Spencer at the age of 22 and 23. Now I see him at 29, 30. Maturation's another level." What does that mean? What is he talking about?
Oh, man. The league ages you in dog years, man. I've lived a lot of life. A lot of life. Nine going on 10 years in the NBA, man. Oh boy, I'm a grandpa. You know what I'm saying? In the real world, bro, like I'm a grandpa. I may only be 29, but like
just in terms of like your body or like life experience or
My body's actually good, man. I eat pretty well and all that stuff, but you just experience so many things, you know. And then how many people in their job, right, get just packed up and shipped around and stuff like that? And you know, I've done it twice in 2 years, right? And it's just different things. And you're in these different cities. You're with different people. You have to go through so much, you know what I'm saying, just in terms of life experience that, you know, you kind of are forced to mature. And especially if you're a student of life as well, like you're going to absorb those experiences. And I think it makes you a better human being.
You talk about Jacque. He was an assistant coach here when you were here the first time around. And I always am interested by the guy who was the assistant who becomes the head coach at some point and how they change. And it was a long time ago when you were with Jacque, but like, is he different as a head coach? Like when you're the head guy, you kind of have to operate a little bit differently than, you know, being an assistant coach. Is there things that you notice that he is different, or is he essentially the same guy? It's just that now there's, you know, he's running the show.
Well, I think what you're going to see is that he's going to put more and more of his imprint on, you know, the team, the culture, and all that other stuff. Just like anything in life, right? Like there's roles to different situations. And as an assistant coach, even if you're the head assistant, you still have to be in a supportive role. You know what I'm saying? To the head coach and whatever the head coach's ultimate vision is, right? So, like I said, Kenny was super analytics-based, all threes and layups, like nothing else, you know? And so, whether you agree with that or disagree with that, like you got to, you know, support it. You know what I'm saying? As much as possible, I mean, healthy discourse, but you got to still support it. I think what you're going to see now is just the full essence and brainchild of JV. And I think him obviously being a former NBA player and really being able to connect to guys on a personal level has served him extremely well and will continue to do so, you know, in the future.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mike wants to know about SVB. That's what he wants to know about. That's his.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you think of Silicon Valley? Because, you know, everyone talks to you about crypto. And, you know, there's a bigger world out there of financial opportunities for Spencer Dinwiddie to comment on. So do you think Silicon Valley Bank should be bailed out, or do you think it should be, you know, should be allowed to die? What's Spencer Dinwiddie's take on that? Like, you're really considering. You're like, wait, it's SVB. Do they sponsor? No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to answer.
I mean,
I'm not
obviously my affinity for crypto, like I've told people all the time, has been because it makes sense, right? Fractional reserve lending, especially to the degree that we do it, doesn't really make sense to me. So would I be, and I know that's not the problem that SVB necessarily went through, because they became insolvent due to, you know what I'm saying, poor investments. But I mean, hey, if a bank has to go under, it has to go under. Now, on the flip side,
Brian, right? That's the headline, real quick. Yeah. That's the headline. We're going to share with the New York Post, Spencer Dinwiddie : banks have to crash. That's what happens.
Yeah, no, I know. Hey, listen,
safe space.
I get caught all the time with hot takes, but I understand bailing them out as kind of like a group psychology effort. I get that part, and trying to save other regional banks so there's no type of bank run or any fears of that. And so this one I'm gonna leave to the politicians. I'm gonna stay in my crypto lane and you know, keep track of basketball.
When you see, like, there's the element of celebrity investor in crypto, which did not work out, from SVB to Samuel Bankman Fried, some SBF. Do you see some level of like investment from other NBA players in crypto? You're like, you have a sense of, like, they don't really understand the crypto. And the same way that, like, when Tom Brady and Kim Kardashian put money towards that.
Well, I think it's kind of twofold, right? I think they were talking about athlete crypto investments, and maybe investment wasn't the right word, because when we talk about investments, we typically think of, like, real estate projects or stocks or bonds, right? Stuff like that. A lot of these things where it wasn't necessarily genuine on the performers or entertainers front, it was more an endorsement deal. It was somebody reaching out saying, hey, I'll give you $1 million if you say XYZ about this NFT and blah, blah, blah. That's much more like an endorsement. You know what I'm saying? That's, you know, I have endorsement deals with Waters and, you know, I have 361, my shoes and stuff like that, right? So, you know, I don't need to know exactly how the company 361 functions and all that stuff. Now, I need to know the shoe is quality and stuff like that, and they're good people, but, you know, not how the company functions itself, right? And I think because crypto already kind of had a negative reputation, black market scams, things of that nature, people always need a target to kind of be mad at. I think, you know, if you really look at it for what it was for most of the entertainers, it wasn't ever an investment, it was endorsement. And with that, you know, being said, for the people that are serious, I'll talk crypto all the time, all day. I tell people that all the time. Like, it's something that I'm actually passionate about. And obviously have been in for several years now. But I think we got to separate that type of thought process and mentality. And I understand, like, with the possibility of losing money, that you don't necessarily want to call it an endorsement, but, you know, that's why it shouldn't be financial advice.
See, you're wrong though, because Brady was the guy cooking the books at crypto.com. This is, you know, you don't know that. I got sources I can't talk about in the Southern District of New York.
No way.
But you had a quote many years ago about Nick Claxton. Mm-hmm. This is when Nick was, you guys had you, Kyrie, KD, and him. And you said Nick was the second most talented player on the team.
Yeah.
And it's been a journey, but Nick Claxton over this past year has really shown a lot. Do you just want to shout from the rooftops and say,
yeah, take a little credit.
I'm like the greatest NBA scout of all time. Because you knew.
Not the greatest NBA scout of all time. I mean, Sean Marks and everybody wants to draft him. But as far as the quote, I think, you know, we saw from the very beginning a dude that was 6'11", fluid, had a nose for the ball, had a kind of an aggression to him. Just the fluidity with which he moved. He could handle it a little bit. He just kind of had all the little, like, skills where you were like, oh, I could see him being able to shoot a little bit in the future. I could see him being able to, you know, push the break a little bit in the future. Like, you could see all these things. And it was more so about, like, letting him know that, like, somebody that was playing at a high level or is playing at a high level saw that in him, giving him kind of maybe the kick in the ass a little bit. And, you know, again, right, talent is nothing without work. So he had to put in the work to start showing this stuff. And I think, you know, he's only scratching the surface. And, you know, with another couple summers of, you know, big time work, he's going to be one of those premier guys in the NBA at his position. But, you know, sometimes we kind of need to know that, kind of need to hear that, especially when we're not playing and we're young and maybe a little discouraged, a little injured, a little banged up. Because that was, I mean, pretty much the knock on him was that he, you know, he always had like little knickknack injuries and stuff like that. But it wasn't ever a talent thing that he was deficient at. And like I said, you're seeing it now.
Better pick and roll partner, Nick Claxton or Jared Allen. And you got to pick one. You got to do it.
That's tough. Because me and Jared had the most lobs in the league and played together for a couple years, I would say J.A.
Okay.
But
shots fired.
Again, me and Nick only played together real for like 10 games. I think what Nick can do in terms of how he moves, his ability to handle and also pass, that he'll be the better pick and roll partner just because you'll be able to hit him in the pocket. He'll be able to make other plays. I was merely just talking from the lob perspective just because, you know, Jay made it super easy on me. Those are both my guys. Like, Jay is really my guy too. So that's you.
I know. I did a bad thing.
I said, throw him somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay. Now list the most talented players on the team. Rank them 1 to 5. You know, I don't know. What is there? 15 games? Or so left in, I don't even know how many left in the season. You know, what are you trying to all figure out? What's the number one priority? Because this team's going to be in the playoffs, right? Yeah. You guys are going to be in the playoffs. Is there a sort of a guiding light for you guys in these next games to put yourself in the best position to just do whatever you guys can do in the playoffs? What's the guiding light there?
Yeah, I mean, I think as it pertains to this year, it's all about growth. I mean, I know that our fan base, went from having championship expectations and kind of still almost does to a degree with a group that was just put together a couple weeks ago. Obviously got to temper that somewhat just because, like, we have to figure each other out. You know what I'm saying? I think every step is kind of a building block and going in that direction. I think, you know, long term, there's a bunch of optimism and fans should be optimistic because you guys have – very clearly two foundational pieces in Mikal and Nick. I think you have a host of, you know, positive direction that it looks like this thing can go, you know, and they're trying to build a foundation and a culture and start to reestablish some of the stuff that they feel like they lost a bit, right? And so, you know, I think this year, it like being able to go to the playoffs, gain that experience and win some games would be huge just for kind of that next step in development. Like having gone to the Western Conference Finals last year with Dallas, you really see what it means to win at the highest level. You know what I'm saying? As the screws tighten and the scouting reports get more dense and everybody gets locked in and you're really playing for something and how that kind of can inspire growth in your team and the young guys, et cetera. And so I think that's the main thing that we're fighting for right now is the building of the foundation. And reestablishing culture, which I know was a word that y'all probably had drinking games back in 10 years here. But I think that's mainly what the target is, and understanding that, you know, we got two really great pieces and you know, looking forward to seeing how it continues to round into form.
Yeah, I will say, I wasn't going to really touch on this, but like, there is an element of the fan base that I don't think has really locked into the fact that you guys were just thrown together.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's something that I've kind of noticed. I've even gotten some, like, you know, questions about like seeding and championship and stuff from reporters and things. And I'm like, hey, listen, guys, don't get it twisted. Like I said, I was just in Western Conference Finals last year. I want to win. I don't like losing. I hated being in a losing situation. It was the most annoying thing in the world. But expecting us to like go out there and beat Milwaukee in a 7-game series being thrown together, is it possible? Can we get enough stops to do it and have a puncher's chance? For sure. Like, we have enough talent here to do it. But like, am I going to bet the farm on it and like kill myself if we don't? Nah. Yeah. I'm saying, like, you know, there's just and you'll see it in little gaps in the game, right? Like, there was one time I thought for sure Mikal was going to curl because that's what he always used to run in Phoenix. And so I threw the ball to the inside and threw it like right to Sabonis. You know what I mean? And it wasn't his fault. It wasn't really my fault. It's just as soon as he planted a certain way, I'm thinking Phoenix play and put a pass. And he stopped. And I said, damn.
Right.
Yeah. And you yelled at him. He glared.
Yeah. No, that was the Mikal one. I didn't. That was Nick Claxton that I glared. Yeah. Because Nick was begging me all game to throw the lob. So I throw it and he don't jump. And I said, don't ask for it.
Yeah.
And then not jump at all. At least jump and hit the ball or something. So we both look crazy. But so
it's just, when you say Phoenix, you bring up the Phoenix. Was that post trade? Obviously you watch film on Phoenix. They're a competitor of yours. But did you watch film to say, okay, I know where Mikal wants it? Or was that just embedded in you from all the research or film work that you had done playing against the team? That you're just like, oh, I know what Phoenix runs. It's not like I don't need to do like extra homework. You know what I mean?
Well, that one I got a little lucky with because Dallas played Phoenix a million times since I had been there. And so, I had watched so much Mikal and Cam and CP and book film that like Sweeney had us watching 45 minutes of film every day. So that was embedded by the point that I actually got to play with him. If it had have been different guys, I might have or probably would have ended up like taking some dedicated time to watch their games.
You talk about Mikal, you've seen him played a bunch of times. Are you seeing something new from him, or did you feel like you saw this in him and it was just, you know, obviously Phoenix, there's a pecking order of Booker, CP3, Ayton getting his touches, and Mikal was put in the role that he was put in?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you said, you kind of understand that roles and opportunity dictate how things go in the league. And so, like you said, it was pretty much a fourth option there. I think we all knew he could score and do it at a high level because when guys were hurt in Phoenix, he did it in stretches. I don't think anybody knew how efficient he could be, right? Like, I know at one point in time, there was a stretch of games he was like 50-50-90, like that. He'd be the greatest score of all time if that maintained, you know what I'm saying? And if it does maintain, we probably will make a playoff run. But, I think that was where everybody was a little bit shocked. We all knew he was a good player. We all probably figured he'd average 20. You know what I'm saying? It was the 30s that was like, oh, okay. You know, he's really got that action.
So, again, just to take away for this interview, Spencer thinks no chance for the playoffs. Mikal is not the greatest player of all time. And he hates Nick Claxton. He loves Jared Allen. Is that the takeaway we should have?
That's how it's going to get chopped up. For sure.
New York Times, let's do it.
All right, man. Spencer, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for helping on me. Hey, Spencer, by the way, you may not know this, but you were the first person to ever be on our show, like 2015, I want to say. And we spent the entire time grilling you about DBZ. So that's a regret. But also, to tie it together, are you watching any anime in 2023? And if so, is it Jujutsu Kaisen?
It's not Jujutsu Kaisen. I've actually been catching up on Boruto.
Okay. You know. That's fine. Get to Jujutsu Kaisen. I think you'll like it. It's
okay. Yeah. I will.
Big wreck. Huge wreck. All right. Mike, get us out of here.
Thanks for listening. This was The Glue Guys. NetSealy.com and The Athletic. Get yourself with the people. We are a subsidiary of The New York Times.
Thanks, Spencer.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks, man. All right.